Welcome to Weird Games and Weirder People, a podcast about role-playing games and the weird, wonderful people behind them.
Hello, wonderful weirdos, this is Diogo Nogueira, and today's guest is on slot 6. He's a game designer, graphic designer of CU, Space Cowboy, and Irregulars, and many other games. We talk about this, his new expansions for CU Space Cowboys, and many other stuff. Before we get into that, I'd like to remind you to please subscribe to the show wherever you listen to your podcasts, leave us a review, tell us what you think about the show, tell other listeners, share the podcast for friends, for gaming group, and if you can, if you have a few coins left for your last adventure, just check the show notes to see how you can support the show, pay us a coffee at Ko-Fi, buy one of my games or anything like that. And getting back to Onslaught 6, we talk about his fixation with Mega Man and how his friends created a group to talk about this and, you know, create stuff centered around this and games. We talk about his experience with tabletop role-playing games, which he initially did with, you know, exploring video game manuals, was something I did too with Warcraft 3 and Diablo. We talked about, no, Warcraft 2. We talk about how he transitioned from D&D to indie games. We talk about how weird is a feeling and not a thing, how he uses music to inspire his games, his favorite forms of procrastination. Talked about a solo dating game, solo journaling dating game he played. We talk about how physical work can be very good for, you know, creativity and be inspired. We talk about how he loves to annoy players, and that's a very good way to think of game design and create something that they want to overcome in a way. It was a very cool chat, very insightful. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. So let's get weird with Onslaught 6. Hello, Onslaught 6. Welcome to Weird Games and Weirder People. I'm very happy to have you here. I've been following, you know, Space Cowboys and your game, and I've seen a lot of good stuff for it. I've seen you releasing more adventures and more supplements for Space Cowboys. But, you know, welcome, and how are you, my friend?
I'm doing all right.
Yeah. For the wonderful weirdos out there who might not know who Onslaught is, what is that you do, can you share a little bit? What is Onslaught 6? Who are you? What is that you do? And share just a small weird detail about yourself or about the way you do your coffee or dress in the morning, stuff like this.
Yep. So I'm Onslaught 6. I am the head honcho of Tidal Wave Games, which is an elaborate scam to siphon money from the tabletop RPG sphere and give it to my friends.
Yeah.
I'm real off the wall. I can't drink coffee. That's one thing. I have this enormous water bottle because I keep having syncopic episodes because I'm dehydrated.
Oh.
So that's not good.
Yeah.
And I'm obsessed with these Starburst red jelly beans, which they only make during Easter, so I have to buy them in bulk when that happens. So there's a box of 12 of them over there.
Well, very nice. And you know, Tidal Wave Games, you put out CU Space Cowboy, which is like a sci-fi RPG inspired by this kind of rough and tumble scoundrels and, you know, bounty hunter, Cowboy Bebop, or probably has a bit of Star Wars and all this kind of settings. And do you want to tell us a little bit about that game, or is Tidal Wave Games putting out other games besides CU Space Cowboy, or is to work on it? How is it going?
Yeah, for sure. So CU Space Cowboy is our main book. We got the setting book, Ceres, the Planet That Never Sleeps, and releasing. When is this going to come out?
This is probably next week. Probably
next week? Okay, well,
Thursday,
on the 23rd of April, so probably a couple days before this, the new book, the Cybernetics Catalog for CU Space Cowboy, is to go live. You'll be able to get the PDF, and we have it in stock in our store. I will have officially released it. I have them all in a box right over there.
Yeah.
And
if you're only listening to it, he showed the book here, so it's printed already, or is he gonna print
it? Yeah, it's printed already. Everything. I ran the Kickstarter, and they're all over there. I'm just waiting on one more of the books that were getting restocked, and all of my shipping supplies are supposed to arrive today. So I'm gonna spend the rest of the day packing envelopes and
opening boxes.
All that.
Yeah.
Great. But we do have other games coming too. I have a lot of stuff in the pipeline. We have you can't get this anymore, but this is A View from the Edge 2023, which is kind of a retro clone of Cyberpunk 2020, because I played Cyberpunk 2077 and I loved it. So I went back to the tabletop game and I found the book kind of incomprehensible. I found the layout of it very, I mean, it was released in 1993. We are literally further away from its release than that game is to the birth of role-playing games. Yes. So they didn't have an extra 30 years or whatever.
We've come a long way. We've come a long way.
Yes, we've come a long way. So I figured I'd just tighten it up a little bit. That didn't do very well, so I'm not going to be printing it again, but whatever. We've also got, we ran a thing for this little game called Irregular, which is a role-playing game about traumatic robots where you play a kind of Mega Man X-style robot hunter character with bad guy robots who like, things have gone wrong in their life, and now they're the bad guys, and so you have to take them out. And the core mechanic for that is that every time something bad happens to you, you can take your hit points, or you can take on trauma. And if your trauma gets too high, then you go irregular and you become one of the bad guys.
Yeah.
But by talking to your fellow hunters, you can make that go down. You can so you go back after and it's like, hey, that really like messed me up. You know, everything that happened, and you like talk it out, and that can reduce that. We got that going on. And I also just released a little retro clone called Knights of Diamond, which is based on the old Wizardry computer RPG games.
Wizardry computer games. Okay, nice. A lot of stuff, right? When did you started publishing and working with putting your own stuff out there? You also mentioned that it's like an elaborate scheme to give money to your friends. How did Tidal Wave Games came together?
Well, so speaking of Wizardry, that is my way into to role-playing games. I have here, I actually keep it next to my desk, it's the manual for Wizardry 2 on the old Nintendo, which was basically an AD&D clone that they created. And I was obsessed with this game and this manual, and I didn't know tabletop role-playing games existed. So this was my player's handbook.
Oh, nice.
Did you
make your own game with it? Like, did you play tabletop?
In 2001, having never played D&D, I had got some dice the county fair had a stall that had some dice, and I picked some up, not knowing how they were actually used, and so I reverse engineered the whole thing. I don't have any of those files anymore. I wish I did.
Of course. But I mean, the memories, yes.
Was the first tabletop game that I ever created. And then some years went by and I got in through, the Westin Games Ghostbusters game briefly after that, which is an all D6 dice pool system, which was also the basis of their Star Wars game.
Yeah.
And I was really into that for a while. And then eventually I come in around like the 5e era of D&D, and that's where I start playing. And after a little bit, I had a really bad experience where I tried to run the 5e starter set for some friends of mine who it just didn't go well. The game wasn't for them and that group at that time. And so I was like, okay, so there's got to be a way to do this. There's got to be a way to set this up. Playing with people who just weren't familiar with the fantasy genre at all. Some of the players, I described a, you know, goblins attacked them and they tried to talk to the goblins because they didn't know what a goblin was. And I was like,
that's great.
you know? And so they, like, they were just very confused about all of the fantasy stuff going on. And they
and bad stuff about this, right? Because you can explore things that you wouldn't explore with veterans, right? But it's also, there's a lot of common language that is lost there, like miscommunication sometimes,
yeah,
and expectations,
exactly.
Right? Yeah.
And so I was like, well, okay, what is something that they will understand? Oh, Cowboy Bebop, bounty hunters in space. Let's go with that. And so I almost from scratch just created basically in a weekend the first playtest document for CU Space Cowboy. And after I ran it a couple times, I was like, there's some things that don't work. And so I just waited for that to fix itself in my head. And that took about a year and a half. And that's when I moved into this house after COVID, and I found my and things sort of settled down after COVID. And I was like, okay, what am I going to do now? Like because the project of getting the house done was over. So I need a new project, because that's how my stupid brain works. I always need to be doing something. And on a whim, I found out about Zine Quest. And so I finished up the document, my original playtest document, and I put it up and I said, here's the document. If you're interested, you can see what the game is like. And I got a few of my friends to do the art, which leads to the friend thing. I have a lot of friends who do art and writing, who I've just sort of like been in contact with through various, we were part of the, we call it the expanded Mega Man fandom.
Nice.
And just, we all have very similar interests and people I went to college with who became artists and stuff like that. And I was just like, I have this community of people who are creative. How do I get them work?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh,
that's great motivation.
I'll get the tabletop company, because I can do all the design. I'm really bad at like world building and lore writing. I think when I write that stuff, it is awful. It might not be, but we're our own harshest critics of that stuff.
Yeah.
So it's impossible for me to be an objective judge of it. Whereas I go to my friend and I'm like, hey, just write a paragraph about dwarves. And then they write it and I'm like, this is the best paragraph about dwarves ever written. And they're like, I think it's bad. And it's like, well, you think it's bad because you wrote it. I think it's good because...
Yeah. I only believed myself that I could write adventures when I somehow won an award for it. I was like, wow.
Oh, that's the recognition.
Yeah, maybe I can do this, you know? Because I always run writing systems and tools. And I was like, yeah, my adventure sucks, you know? But yeah, it's like self-critic. Our self-critic is the worst. I was talking to my kid just today, you know, about how is it important for us to be our best friends. Because like something bad happens, you're like, oh, I'm the worst, I'm this, I don't know how to do this. But if it was a friend of ours, like, if it was a friend of ours saying this to themselves, you say, no, man, don't say that. You're great. You do this, you do that. But with ourselves, we are not friends of ourselves a lot of times, right? So it's something we have to internalize. So that applies to writing, to creativity, too. I don't know. Everything is practice. I mean, as you said, I'm terrible world building. I think it's just practice and being more comfortable. And yeah. Do you feel like that? Was there something that you maybe thought you couldn't do before and you did it and somehow you acquired this confidence to keep doing it?
Layout for sure. Because when I originally started, there was a friend of mine who did layout and I was like, okay, I did all the writing. My friend is going to do all the art and then you'll do the layout. And then things went... It just, their life became too complicated where they were like, I'm not going to be able to do the layout. And I was like, okay, I guess I'll just try to do the layout. How hard could it possibly be? And that first draft of the layout was pretty good. I know now some things that, because it's been 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, we're always getting better, right?
Right.
We are
always
improving.
Every time I open Affinity Publisher, I learn something new about how it works or how to do page layout or something like that.
Yeah. That's great.
And now what I've discovered is that I really love doing layout, and I think it's one of the first, it's one of my strengths.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I'm not that big of a fan. I mean, I do it because it's cheaper if I do it myself, and I'm getting better too,
right.
So I'm getting used to it. But yeah, I love writing. Like, it's very strange. I graduated in graphic design in art school. I always loved doing illustrations. That was always thought about doing. I did like children's book illustrations, but I love writing. That's like the thing I like the most for some reason. Onslaught, the show here is called, can I call you Onslaught or yeah. Onslaught 6? Like, okay.
Onslaught's fine.
Okay. The show is called Weird Games and Murder People. We talk about the weird and like in a positive way. And one of our, you know, catchphrases is weird is the new wonderful. So I'd like to ask you, what is weird for you? And are you interested in the weird? Do you seek it in your work? Do you seek it in life? How is your relationship with the weird for you?
I think weird is more of a feeling than a definition. You can't put a label on something like that. You have to feel it. You have to be reading the thing or looking at the thing and just feel in your soul. You go, that's weird. Like when you, it's just hard for me to do it other than that. Just it's all in the feel. And it's all about, I'm constantly trying to dig into the further reaches of things that less and less people know about. My YouTube recommendations are absolutely bonkers. I get recommendations for channels that have like 20 subscribers and 100 views. And I'm just like, this is the real stuff.
What kind of stuff do you do?
My weird stuff to watch on YouTube. 90% like retro game stuff, like retro video game stuff, and weird guitar stuff too. Before I got into tabletop, I was a musician, and I'm still a musician. I still play, but we don't really. It's been a long time, and I haven't had anything to say in the music format in a long time. But we're trying to write some new songs. I had like a solo like industrial metal project, and then with my wife, we had like a synthwave pop vocal sort of thing going on.
Nice.
I forget why I brought that up.
You're talking about weird guitar stuff on YouTube, and I wanted to ask you.
Yeah. So
what
like,
is weird guitar stuff?
Just strange pedals. That make your guitar sound weirder.
Effects and
weird ways to play guitar, and interviews with musicians are all in there.
Yeah, experimenting stuff. They're talking about their experimentation, stuff like this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, great. Yeah, I mean, do you think music inspires your work in tabletop RPG in some
way? Oh, definitely, for sure. I can't really write without having music there. And we try to make playlists for everything that we do. A lot of my community members sort of, we're all clustered around music in that way. We have very similar musical tastes, and we're trading music to each other all the time and showing each other stuff. And when Saris came out, I was like, we should have a playlist for this that people can throw on in the background when they're running this. And overnight, 61 songs. Like, just
nice.
Boom, we were ready.
And then what have you been listening lately?
I just did this. I'm going to go ahead and do this. I just made a playlist called Spring 2024, which is just things that I'm listening to in spring of 2024, which I did this last year in spring, and that went pretty well, and I ended up listening to that for most of... I don't play it. Just show me, you stupid. So Black Sabbath is putting out their Tony Martin era stuff again. So I'm listening to some of that. I have the last Nirvana song, You Know You're Right, on there. I have Change in the House of Flies by Deftones. I have the new John Carpenter jam. I have Altered Beast Suite by King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard. I have 80s Action Star by the Lethal Weapons, who are a duo from Japan. I'm pretty sure the singer is like an American guy who went to Japan and like learned Japanese.
What's the name?
The Lethal Weapons is the name.
Oh.
And the song is called 80s Action Star, English subtitle. And it's just a song. Literally, it's just talking about like Sylvester Stallone and Arnold Schwarzenegger and all that. Just stuff.
They have... Japan does stuff like this. Like, they have like a samba group in Japan that, you know, Japanese people singing Portuguese samba here from Brazil, but they don't know Portuguese, you know, so it's kind of really weird in a way. They do, yeah. But it's cool, fun. They are fans, yeah. Very nice. And you say you use this for when you're writing, when you're creating your work. And I wanted to ask you, is this part of like a creative ritual? Do you do anything to help you get into the mood of writing, of creating, besides music? Like, do you pour coffee? Do you read a little bit before? Do you put on shoes or anything?
So I have a, my day job is actually a night job. At night, I go and I stock shelves at a grocery store. And then I come home at around like 7 or 8 a.m. and then I go to sleep and I wake up in the afternoon and I do it all over again. So my days off are Monday and Tuesday. And Monday night, my wife works night shift, like so from like 2 to 8. So I wake up somewhere around in the late afternoon, like 5 o'clock. She gets home at 8. We eat dinner. And then I'll usually conk out around like 9:30. And I will wake up at like 4 a.m. on Tuesday morning, which is our day off. And she's asleep because she's like, I don't have to pick you up from work. So I'm going to sleep in. So I come in here. I close the door. I turn my fancy LED lights on and I put the headphones on and I put on music and I just, whatever I feel like doing, I do it. I just work on stuff, whatever project, because the ADHD means I'm juggling 6 projects at once. And so whichever thing I feel like working on at that time, I just pull it out. Unless there's something that has like a big deadline coming up. I have like a task list of things that I need to do and I check those off. And usually I use that as kind of like a warm up.
Are you good with that? Because I try to have one, but sometimes I just forget.
This one is right here on my email and it's also on my phone. So anytime I think of a thing, I can just add it to the list and have it be there. And I'm pretty good about it. What I find helps is having a bunch of stuff that you know you're not going to do be on the list. Weirdly. Like I have at the bottom, at the very bottom of my list, fix Korg plugins. For my music software, there's a bunch of plugins that
stuff that you won't do helps?
Weirdly, yes, because it's like I'll look at that and go, I don't want to do that, but what I need to do something on the list to feel productive. So if there's a bunch of stuff on the list that I don't want to do or don't feel inspired to do,
you get motivated to do.
I get motivated to do the other stuff. It's weird that way.
Yeah. I look at them and say, I have to do something. I look and say, this will take two.
I need to go in and I need to change the fucking font or whatever. Yeah. Can I swear it's on just, here? I'm sorry.
Like, yeah, of course. Fuck yeah.
Okay, cool.
I mean, it's just like that, you know, little dopamine rush. Like, yes, I finished something, you know.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Mission accomplished
usually
for today.
My warm up is just knocking a few little things off. And then it's like, okay, I did that. Yeah. Now I've woken up. I'm in the program already.
Yeah. And are you able to always sit there and work? Or are you get distracted? Do you watch something?
Sometimes. It just depends on how much I've been doing lately and how inspired I am. Cause sometimes it just doesn't happen and you know, you gotta roll with that. Cause like you were saying earlier, we gotta be friends to ourselves. You gotta recognize when you're just like, nothing's going to happen today. And that's okay. Because the last three weeks I was very productive and I did a bunch of stuff.
Do you still try though? Do you still like, I don't know if nothing's going to come out, but I'm still going to sit there.
Yeah, for sure.
Half an hour to see if it happens or.
Yeah, well, I try not to. With music, there was a lot of that. There was a lot of just open the thing and start playing and see what comes out. Because that's a lot of times in music how the inspiration comes. Just from messing around and doing stuff. And then you just play something and you go, what did I just play? Oh, play that again. Yeah. Ooh, that's really cool. And then it snowballs into a thing. Yeah. I find that happens less with RPG design just because it doesn't... Like, I haven't really figured out a way to just like play around with design. Like I have to have
it. Yeah.
The good news is I have like 12 projects in my head.
Yeah, of course. So, I mean, I think the similar thing for me here is like something that Neil Gaiman said one day. It was like, for writing, I sit down and just write everything that comes to my mind. And sometimes I have to put out 500, you know, bad words before the good stuff start to come out. So for me, it's something like this, like jamming, or just start writing, putting stuff out. Sometimes it's not good, it's not bad. And after a while, things start clicking. And maybe for me, that's kind of what is like experimenting and then playing around and maybe doing notes on paper, playing with dice. You know, I love playing with dice and see new mechanics. You know, if I do this with the six, I can pile them. I can, you know, maybe try a sequence or keep playing with things and toys and see how I can maybe use that in a game somehow. So, yeah. Talking about, you know, procrastination and not doing what we wanted to do, do you have any kinds of, you know, favorite forms of procrastination?
For one thing, I have the, yeah, as I call it affectionately, the Hasbro shill wall. I have probably 2,000 Transformers over here. Ridiculous. So I'm constantly keeping track of that and what's coming out now? What do I have to get? What do I do? Yeah. Do I have this thing on pre-order? Is that coming out soon? Etc. I have to manage all of that, especially with my finances of that. I play video games all the time.
I mostly play
retro games. I feel like video games peaked in 1994 and it's all been downhill since then. But I still play some modern games. I got really into Elden Ring for a while. I'm playing Marvel Midnight Suns right now, which is really fun.
Nice.
It's a shame that game didn't do very well.
Yeah. Do you play board games too, or other forms of tabletop?
Yeah, usually Thursday mornings. Sometimes I have a group of friends who come over to my house and play board games. We got really into one called King's Dilemma, which is it's a legacy board game, so it like continues on every time you keep playing it. And there, all of these cards came in like envelopes. And so the cards come in envelopes and you shuffle them into the deck and different events come up. And then you have to debate on whether we're going to vote this way or vote that way. And then you can bribe each other with money and future votes and all this wacky stuff.
Nice. And talking about, you know, games, video games, role-playing games, and this is a show about the weird, I'd like to ask you maybe, what would be the weirdest game you played, or a very weird game you played recently that made an impact to you and made you think about games, game design, or just weirdness in general?
This is tough for me because so much of what I grab is off the wall. Like, I am big on Exalted Funeral and Spearwitch and all the websites, and I buy... Yeah. Huge amounts of what they put out. But the thing that probably unlocked my brain the most recently was a game called My Body is a Cage by, I think they just go by Snow now. I know they're at Snow TTRPG on Twitter. Mm-hmm. I know that. And so My Body is a Cage is kind of a like Persona-esque game, like Persona the video game series, where basically during the daytime you have like a normal life, or you have a job, or you go to school, you have relationships with people. And then at night when you fall asleep, you go into a dungeon and you're like a fantasy character, and the gold that you collect becomes real in your real life, I guess. But the layout of it and some of the things that it done just blew my mind away. For example, the treasure generator is not like a roll table. You're supposed to cut it out and fold it up. And I don't know what these things are actually called, but the little paper things that like elementary school girls have where you like, call them fortune tellers, I think, where you like fold it a couple times and then you move your fingers together and you lift up the thing that's supposed to tell you what boy you like.
There's
or whatever.
A message. Yeah.
That's the treasure table for that game. and like all of the class abilities are on like a bingo table. It's nuts, and the layout of it is wild. Like, it's real Morkborg looking, different text everywhere, stuff, and that just basically unlocked like a switch in my brain.
Yeah, it's very much like the thing I'm talking about, like playing with dice or playing with other toys and playing with this childhood thing. That maybe was something the author really played with a lot, or has someone that has played in that clicked something and it started creating. That's the experimenting thing that we're talking about, right? Like the experiment with the guitar and coming off these ideas. Do you have anything like this you want to work into a game or any kind of, you know, play activity or weird kind of mechanic that you're thinking incorporating in
your... The biggest weird thing that I'm doing right now is I'm working on a solo dating journaling RPG where you're in high school and there are multiple girls that you can date and you have to roll dice in order to go on successful dates with them.
Nice. And it will be only like boys and girls, or it can be variety, what are you thinking about?
It's going to be... So this is getting a little ahead of ourselves. Internally, I use the word girl like the way D&D uses monster. It's like, if you encounter a group of elves, they're not monsters, they're elves.
Yeah, but of course.
They're in the monster manual, right?
Yeah, love
so anybody
interest,
that you
like
could date
girls,
is a girl, even if some of them identify as female or some of them is male or non-binary. I want to start, and this is getting ahead of myself because I haven't even designed any of these yet, but I want to start with three female identifying, two male identifying, and a non-binary, and then we'll add more for stretch goals is the idea.
Yeah. Expansions. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. And Onslaught, I love asking people here about maybe their sources of inspiration, maybe a special place or period of time in your life that you see yourself drawing a lot from. I myself have this thing with the stuff that I loved during my childhood because, you know, I was isolated, so that was like my refuge. So I draw from like movies, comics, cartoons, stuff that I experienced back then. Do you have anything like this for yourself? Maybe a period of time or maybe a part of culture? You know, I see you talk a lot about Mega Man and sci-fi stuff, so I would imagine something like this. Do you have any area of your life that you draw a lot from? I know as a game designer, you're always drawing about everything you experience, but I mean...
There is a period of time from like 2001 to like 2005, that early internet Web 1.0 fandom experience that I'm really trying to capture, especially because in that time period, forum roleplay was like a big thing, like a special forum or a section of a forum where people would gather and they would like freeform roleplay without any system at all. And basically it was more like collaborative fan fiction, but I had that experience and a lot of people in my friend group had that same experience. And I'm kind of trying to figure out and capture, I think a lot of us grew up and then now that we're all in our 30s, we started playing D&D and tabletop, and I'm trying to like get that experience, the forum roleplay experience and the mechanical like D&D like experience, and I'm trying to figure out where those two meet and make the perfect thing for that, and I haven't done it yet.
And what would you say is this special forum experience? Is this like the fear role playing thing? Would that be something similar to LARPing, or what do you imagine? I know you said you haven't been managed to capture that yet, but what do you imagine this will be when you do?
I think it's just a matter of getting the right system context down where the system gets out of the way of the gameplay rather than reinforcing it, which is getting deep in the weeds with the game design.
So you feel like something that kind of disappears and it's like a complete immersion in the story or something like this?
Maybe. I'm not sure It's hard for me to figure out.
That's the experience thing you think about, like the weird guitar thing. It's like experimenting with the way you do RPGs. Sometimes you focus more maybe on the meta game and playing with the parts and playing with dice and maybe accessories. And this can be part of the fun too, like this kind of toys in gaming. And sometimes you want something that's completely disappears, very role playing. So right now you feel more gravitating to this more like very minimalistic and very role playing part of experience of role playing games.
Maybe. I mean, I'm constantly, the problem with me is I'm an omnivore about games. I love all of it. I love the rules light story games, and I love the chunky grid combat with the miniatures and all of that. Give me all of it, and I'll play one day, and then later that day I might play something else.
Yeah, I'm just asking what you're seeking to experiment with right now. The way you said, you're like, I'm trying to seek this more very fluid kind of gaming, so that's what I
really think.
I was guessing this.
I think the core of it probably has to be D20 and D6. I think that's really what it comes down to. I think there's something in there, because I think just a D20 and you can add a D6, and I think it's maybe a D6 dice pool where the highest is the one you use.
Mm-hmm.
So like if there are multiple sources where you could get a mm-hmm. D6, if it. And I haven't really cracked this. It all, the way my brain works is that my job is very physical. I open mm-hmm. the box, I take the stuff out, I put it on the shelf. I open the box, I dig it out, I put it on the shelf. So
you
my
think
brain
a lot
has
during that. Yeah.
all of this time to just think about things. And and as soon as two neurons collide and I have an idea, I write it down in my phone and then I go back to my job. And then on Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday, when I have time, I can iterate on those ideas. And so I'm just kind of letting it roll.
Do you ever take notes during the job? Because, you know, physical activity. Oh, yeah. Because
I have my phone on me all the time. So it's I just open up my notes app or whatever, or my Discord to myself and just write. Yeah. You know, solving Space Cowboy happened at my job. I was at my job and I was listening to some game design podcast or something like that. And just as soon the words just formed in my head, juice only works on failures. And I just wrote that in my phone and I immediately knew how to fix that. Juice is a mechanic in Space Cowboy.
Yeah.
That's a kind of meta currency that lets you press your luck and turn failures into successes.
Nice. Right? Yeah.
And so, that was the sticking point for Space Cowboy. For like a year and a half, I couldn't figure out how to make it work within the context of the system.
That's fantastic. Like I'm always reading, you know, about creativity and game design and stuff like this. And there is always a part that says about inspiration and needing, you know, to cultivate creativity, how sometimes, you know, physical activities and doing something that you can just turn off your brain and let it sink and creating something else can help you have ideas and solve problems. And having, as you said, like a job that's basically you're doing like physical stuff, like carrying stuff and stocking shelves, can let you work on these ideas on the background. Do you do any other kind of physical activities to help you with this? I mean, you mentioned ADHD, which sometimes is related to anxiety too. And I know for myself, exercise is very important to me to control my anxiety. Do you think that helped? Do you have anxiety?
I definitely
do more
have
exercise?
Kind of anxiety thing. I didn't have insurance until like 2 years ago. So I'm having like I'm trying to get myself like properly diagnosed. I was diagnosed with ADHD when I was a teenager and they put me on some stuff. And then, and then when I grew up, I didn't have insurance anymore. So that all went away and I just had to learn how to like deal with it.
Yeah.
I'm not good with the physical activity stuff. I'm trying to get on that train, especially because now that I moved here, I can walk to my post office. It's like 2 or 3 blocks down the road. So later today, as long as this rain lets up, I'm going to be carrying a stack of packages down to my post office. And that's going to take like 20 minutes of my day. But I'll be able to like be outside and you know.
Yeah, be outside is super important. Yeah. look at the sky, right? I remember during the pandemic, I just have to walk a block around the block to see the sky and see people and yeah. So, and you know, carrying a bunch of books to the post office is some kind of exercise too. So that is something. Onslaught, do you have any kind of maybe role model or maybe a mentor? They don't necessarily has to be someone that actually sat down with you and taught you anything. Maybe artists, creators, writers, designers, anyone that you maybe stood their work, hear their interviews, read their books or anything like this, that help you model the way you approach your work, the way you approach your craft, or the way you position yourself in this space?
In the game design space, I really respect Matt Colville and Luke Gehring, who I think is the greatest living writer in tabletop RPGs, who's currently putting stuff out. I'm just constantly inspired by their ethic and their ideas. But outside of that, I'm really inspired by the musician Henry Rollins, who was the lead singer of Black Flag in the 80s, the punk hardcore band. Because when I first saw him on all of these like VH1 shows in the early 2000s as like a talking head character where he would just talk about the music industry and stuff like that. But the more I learned about him, the more I respected his like what I call East Coast work ethic, because I'm from Pennsylvania. I'm on the East Coast. And I imagine us having this kind of working class. You got to get up in the morning and go to work and do your stuff and your life is probably going to suck. But your job is going to afford you to eat and have a roof over your head and buy a couple little things a week. And if you can do that, you'll be happy. He kind of drilled that into me from the way he talks and the way he experiences stuff. Because even when he became part of the band, their work ethic became huge like that. They were like, we have to go out and earn our spot because this is not guaranteed for us. And if we don't practice in the band and we're not the best band that we could possibly be, then this is all going to go away and we're going to have to go get regular jobs. And so him and Arnold Schwarzenegger has like a very similar work ethic about him. So I've always been inspired by that.
I know I love this. I mean, I try to incorporate that a lot. So like, do the work. Like one thing that I want to tattoo on my arm is this phrase from a book called "Put Your Ass Where Your Heart Wants to Be." So if it's something that you want, you gotta sit down and do the fucking work.
You gotta do the work.
But how do you balance that and the thing we're talking about, like being like your best friend? Do you see yourself always demanding a lot of yourself? You know what I mean? That you always like say, oh, you're not doing enough.
I want to do it is the thing. So like when I wake up on Tuesday morning at 4 a.m., there's nothing I want to do more than crack open the documents and start messing with stuff or making changes or doing whatever. Just because of my job and the way it's like night shift, sometimes I call it losing days. I will come home at 7 or 8 in the morning, and I might just fall asleep until I have to go to work at 9 o'clock. Like I might just lose Thursday. Thursday might be gone, and then I'm at work, and then it's, you know, I'm at work. I'll have maybe an hour and 15 minutes to myself where I bought a laptop with some funding from doing some layout freelance. Yeah. So I can actually work on stuff while I'm at work. I've made entire books at work almost.
Just
an hour at a time over the course of 4 or 5 days. And then what frustrates me is when like the most updated file is here on the desktop and I didn't put it in Google Drive or whatever. So every day at work, I'm like, I didn't upload the thing. I can't work on the thing now.
Well, that's why you have 6 projects, because if you don't have the file there, you just work on something else. Yeah, that's what I do too. That's really, but what I meant was more like, I don't know, it's me, maybe just me. Like I'm autistic, so I have, you know, this is my hyperfocus. So I have to discipline myself to not be thinking about this all the time, because otherwise I'll be, you know, with friends and family, and I'll be either thinking about this or maybe writing on my phone or something like this. So I always have to, you know, control myself to not be, I have to work more, I have to write more, I have to do more and live a little bit too, right?
I'm pretty lucky in that my wife and I both, we value our alone time, which okay. sounds weird to some people.
No, yeah. No, that's,
Tuesday
we all
is
need
our
that.
Collective
we all
day
need
off.
That.
Tuesday is the day that we both always have off of work. So that's kind of the only day of the week that we really have together. And we value that time and we like it. But even that day from 4 to like 8 a.m., that's my time to just do whatever. And just even if we're both off, if in the middle of the day I want to go up and just start writing something or do something, she'll be downstairs and play video games or watch a movie and do whatever. And we're okay with that. We don't need to be constantly in each other's lives all the time. Oh, we're already 5 days of the week we're not sleeping in the same bed just because of logistic reasons. And that doesn't bother us. So as far as, you know, I do what I want. And I'm
that's
okay
awesome.
With that.
Yeah. That's great. You know, what works for each person can be different, you know. And also, do you think, you know, your work, the project that you do, do you think you have maybe a weird mark or something that's unique to you that you live in your work? And if you do, can you tell us a little bit more about what you believe your mark, your style, your voice is in your work?
What I'm discovering about my work is, so the first thing is I love to annoy the players. I love it when the players have to deal with really stupid, mundane bullshit that they should be above with. I actually very recently said, I think my favorite type of fantasy is, fuck, I gotta buy new boots. Like, we're in a fantasy world. There are dragons, there is magic, but I still gotta get new boots because these boots are ruined now because of the thing I had to do. In CU Space Cowboy, the space travel is very annoying. It's annoying to calculate. It's the most annoying part of the book. You have to figure out, how am I gonna feed myself during this journey between planets? How much money am I going to have to spend to do that? And every time I tell the players to start doing this, they roll their eyes and they get angry. In my D&D games, I occasionally make the players play taxes. I have a guy show up to their house and it's like, hey, it's tax day. How much gold have you accumulated over the last year? How much, you know, how many magic items have you found? Oh, we need to record that for the census. Yeah.
It kind of makes me feel like the worst monster is just mundane life.
It's bureaucracy.
Right? Yeah.
It's the only thing they can't stab their way out of.
That's a really high challenge rating. Why do you think you do that? Are you very annoyed by those things in real life?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's the biggest pain in my ass is just the
bureaucracy,
logistics,
taxes,
of the fact
forms.
That I have to pay my bills, and every time when it's like, okay, it's time to pay the bills, I have to log into three different websites, and they all have different passwords, and I don't know where the bill is for this one, so I don't know my account number. So now I have to find an old bill. Did I throw those away because I thought I wouldn't need them?
Yes.
And I thought they were trash. Now they're all, I'm digging in the trash can to try and find an old bill. You know, that annoys me so
much. I'm going nuts. Yeah. Yeah, that's great. I mean, I love it that you put that in your game and like as almost as an escape valve for yourself and you know, annoying players and seeing the fun part in it, right? Because for us, it's not fun at all, but you're playing with it. That can be a lot of fun, right?
Yeah, I mean, I try to make some sort of mechanism in there to make it so that the players are still they're still rolling
of
dice.
Of course, yeah.
They're still playing the game.
It's kind of a fun annoyance, you know, but it's funny that we're dealing with that and, you know, it's a way for us to laugh at our own problems in a way, right?
Yeah. It's that, and also I have a friend who for some medical reason or something like that, he can't be forklift certified. He would love to be forklift certified and be able to operate a forklift, but because I forget what it is, maybe he's colorblind or something like that. And so he's like legally not allowed to operate a forklift. So in every game that is setting appropriate, I insert some way that you can become forklift certified. In the cybernetic catalog, there's just a thing where it's like, hey, you now have the knowledge of how to operate a forklift. You're forklift certified.
That's
so
awesome.
If he wants, and he can be forklift certified in my game.
Yeah. That's great. Onslaught, do you think you have any, you know, talents or advantage that maybe helped you in your work? And if you do, can you talk to us a little bit about what is it?
I don't know if talent exists. I think there's only skill in practice. Because even if some people are more naturally disposed, is that the right word? I don't know. If they're inclined toward one thing or another. Excuse me, I keep burping because I drank all that Coke.
That's okay.
Even if they're inclined in that direction, they still have to work to get to the level that they're at. And
Something that, for example, what I say myself, there was like a panel one day and people goes, oh, Diogo, can you give us any tip or how to finish, you know, projects because we started and couldn't finish? And I said, well, I don't know if I can, you know, be honest about this. As I said to you, like, I'm autistic, so this is my hyperfocus. So finishing stuff for me is like, I have to, you know. So that's kind of, it's bad, but it's kind of an advantage too, because it's something that just pushes me forward in a way, you know.
I think it's just that East Coast work ethic thing. I think it's just been beaten into me that you have to work to survive. And if you don't work, you don't eat, you know? I'm not lucky enough that this is my day job, but it's just like, if you don't finish the thing, it can never be put out and then no one can ever experience it.
Yeah. And also the same thing, it's okay if it sucks for a while, it will pass, it will be better afterwards, right? Because a lot of people avoid this work, I have to do this, but it's painful, it's not looking good, and people just drop it. I love this graphic that there is one of Austin Kleon's book that shows like a life of a project, and it starts in high, oh, this is going to be great, and starts sucking and getting down, and like, it's the worst day ever. And people always think about quitting here, but if you push through, it gets a little bit better, and you finish lower than you expected, but you learn a lot, and you can do better next time, right?
That arc that you're describing is exactly the arc that I go through every time I paint a miniature.
Yeah.
I go, oh, this is going to be great. I'm going to have a great time. And, oh, I'm ruining it. Oh, it sucks. Oh, it's awful. There's paint everywhere. It looks like crap. And that's when I know, okay, put it down, wait for everything to dry, come back, and then you can start doing the thing. That's when I know it's time to stop. I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah. And then that once I start putting that second coat in and I start fixing all my little mistakes and everything, then it starts looking better. And I go, oh, okay, this is going to be great.
Yeah. And I think it's maybe something like that in a lot of creative pursuits that we do. We create a lot of expectations, but we don't know how to deal with them. Because as we're progressing, nothing is getting finished. But it's like the old saying, finish it's better than perfect, because it will never be, you know, nothing is so. Yeah. And by the way, do you have difficult to any part of, you know, the work in particular?
I struggle with in my layout hyper maximalism. I'm deathly afraid of white space being anywhere in the book. I think there should be art or text or a sidebar or something. I want to fill every spot of every page. And I think that's
flaw. Really hard.
I don't think that's a good thing.
Yeah, because I see some people doing really fantastic white space layout. And when I do it, I'm like, something's missing.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I want to put something there, like spot art.
Then my budget goes up because now I have to go to one of my friends and be like, hey, I need a drawing of a guy with a gun to put here.
Yeah, that's true. That's true, yeah. And Onslaught, we're getting into basically 1 hour of the episode, which is we're talking a lot about gaming and RPG. And I would like to ask you more personal questions about yourself, about experience you might have had. And I always start asking about maybe a weird experience you might have had with maybe deep states of meditation, hypnosis, near-death experience, out-of-body experience, any kind of weird metaphysical thing you might have lived through and changed the way you see life, see yourself. Do you have ever gone through any of this?
I mentioned earlier that I've been having syncopic episodes. They've occurred maybe the last like 15-ish years. If you don't know what that is, it's when your blood pressure rapidly changes and you pass out as a result of it. And so this has happened. It happened like twice when I was like in 2010, and then it happened again in like 2014, and then it didn't happen for a while, and then it happened like three times in the last couple months.
Wow.
And I think it's compounded by dehydration. So I just wasn't taking care of myself. And so I was having these episodes where I was passing out. One of them happened while I needed to get an IV put in for something else because they were running some tests on me for an unrelated medical issue. And I passed out when she put the IV in me, and I woke up screaming and with like a bunch of people holding me down.
Wow.
But when I pass out, I'm there. I'm conscious. I can't see anything. I'm like in a black void. I can't see or feel anything. And I, not being present in the real world for the experience, I don't know if I'm controlling my body or not, and I just don't feel the feedback, or if I literally am paralyzed, and I have no idea what that is. But I, at some point in that void, I recognize that I'm not getting feedback. I try to look down at my feet and see if can see my feet. Can I see my hands? Can I move my hands? It's like I'm sending the signal to move my hands. Are my hands moving? And I don't get that feedback. And that's when I start screaming internally.
Wow.
And I don't know if that triggers the screaming in real life. Because the hearing the screaming wakes me up, or what? It's very weird.
Did anybody ever told you how it is from the other side?
My wife told me that she just says that I'm like seizing up. I'm having seizures. I'm like rapidly moving and doing like wildly moving. So I don't know.
Yeah. Wow. And
she says it's very scary. The weird thing about it is I am very nonchalant about it. Because once I come to, I'm screaming, and then I'm like trying to verbalize as like the feeling in my mouth comes back. So, and I'm just like, I'm not okay. I'm okay. Hold on, I can sit up. No, I'm good. And I just, you know, then after a couple minutes, everything like shifts back into place, and I might feel a little bad depending on what happened, especially if I hit my face or something like that.
Yeah. Wow.
But then like an hour later, I'll be like, yeah, I feel fine. I feel normal. What happened?
Well, nothing happened. Yeah. Nothing
happened.
It's over. Yeah. This too shall pass. Right.
Yeah.
And you know, do you have dreams? Do you remember your dreams?
Oh, I definitely remember dreams. I have very weird dreams. All sorts of weird stuff happens. I just had a dream. I will have like dreams about movies that don't exist. I dreamed pretty recently about like a Netflix. I was like, I dreamt about the live action Netflix Evangelion series.
Right? Nice.
And it starred Patrick Stewart in the 90s because it's a dream. Right. Yeah. And I had a whole detailed thing about it. It was
nice.
Crazy.
Do you
like all of the details about this non-existent Netflix series?
Do you steal from your dreams? Maybe for your work? Do you take notes?
Design come to me in dreams.
Nice.
I had a dream one time where I was playing a game with a certain dice configuration. And when I woke up, I wrote that down and I was like, oh, this is the basis for this.
That's amazing.
I don't think that went anywhere, but the point stands that I did, you know, try to develop it.
it might not go anywhere now, but I mean, in the future, like you have
yeah,
this
that's
node.
The other thing. I keep everything around. I use all parts of everything that I have. Yeah. When I wrote music, sometimes a song would come out 6 or 7 years after I wrote it, just because it wasn't ready then, and now it's ready.
Yeah, I'm writing a game right now that I started writing like mid 2022. I have written a bunch of stuff, but kind of laid to the side there. Did a bunch of other stuff, read a bunch of other stuff, played some games, had a new ideas, and getting back to it, restricting, drawing from other inspirations, and remaking everything. Like all these notes we have, I love this analogy that it's like a morgue that we store all these dead parts there, and one day we just create a new Frankenstein with the dead parts of all the stuff we kept there. Another thing that I love asking people here is maybe rude experience they might have had with altered states of awareness. So either to deep meditation, you know, music, transcendental experience, or, you know, the use of psychedelics like mushrooms or LSD. Have you ever had any experience with altered states of awareness? And if you did...
Not really. I have not had the pleasure of doing that. I want to... there's a friend of mine who wants to do this with me, which is a recent discovery, which is cool. I want to get mushrooms and I want to take them with my friend, and we want to play the Japanese PlayStation game LSD Dream Emulator, which is this wild, weird Japanese game where you just wander around these like weirdly textured areas. And
where
like
can you play that?
Places. It's a PlayStation game. You can just emulate. If you can emulate PlayStation games, you just get the ROM off of there and you can play it. But I've never played it. I am only like tangentially aware that it exists and what it looks like. I have like explicitly like, oh, I'm not going to experience this because I want to experience it in an altered space and freak out with it. I don't know when I'm going to do that, but that's like on my bucket list.
There is one for on Steam too, LSD Dream Emulator. Probably you can play it on computer too. I don't know if it's the same game.
Yeah, it's the same game.
Okay, yeah. I think I'm going to get that someday. It runs on Mac. That's great. I'm getting
there
this.
Check it out.
Yeah. Maybe for my next trip. I don't know. That's great. This friend that wants to do this with you, do you have plans for it? You've talked about doing this?
No, because Pennsylvania where all this stuff is like super criminalized. So I don't know where we would even get our hands on that stuff. But you know, at some point I'll figure it out.
Yeah. Has he done this before? Has he done mushroom before?
No.
Oh, you know, both, you know.
I had proposed it as a joke. I was listening to a podcast where someone was talking about the game, and he works with me. He was like working in the next aisle. So I pop over to the next aisle. I'm like, hey, Brendan, you want to get high on mushrooms and play LSD Dream Emulator for the PlayStation 1? He was like, yeah, let's do it.
Well, I think it's great. Like you're both grown men. Your brains are formed already. I think it's the best time to try this.
Yeah,
so,
why not?
Yeah, yeah. Just start slow. Start small.
Yeah.
Like art. Start small and you need to build for that. Onslaught, I love asking people here, you know, about another very weird part of their lives, which is, you know, spirituality, religion, or maybe philosophy, anything that maybe helps you to guide you through the difficult, you know, periods of life or difficult decisions. Do you have anything like this for yourself? Are you a religious person? Do you have any sort of spirituality or maybe follow any kind of philosophy that guides your life in any way?
When I was like 9 years old, I became an atheist because I think there was just a lot of misplaced anger at the Christian organization that didn't really... I never personally felt oppressed. My family wasn't very religious. But neither was anyone who I was around. It wasn't like people were constantly pushing it on me. But the media of that time, this was around like the late 90s and early 2000s. The media kind of really had a big thing with that. and like then the Bush administration kind of doubled down on that.
We still have, right? With like still very right,
yeah.
Or no?
Yeah, and so I lashed out against that. As I grew up, I became more like agnostic, where it's kind of like, if there is a higher power, is he gonna pay my electric bill?
That would be good, right?
If the aliens landed tomorrow, it's like, okay, are they gonna pay my rent? No, then tell them to get a job like everybody else.
Yeah. That wouldn't be awesome. Like the alien just, you know, landing here and just getting off the porch and, hey, get out of my law.
Yeah.
And something. You weird gray thing. Just get out of here. Go get a job.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. You know, I joke that I became an atheist because of stand-up comedy, especially, you know, George Carlin.
Dude, right? You know? That was the whole, yeah. That was the same thing. I found George Carlin right around the same time, and hearing him like rail against the institution of the church, like really like, I internalized that. I was like, he's talking about me. And even there was no reason to suppose that that was true, but.
Yeah, but I love that one that says like, you know, governments and you know the church already fucks you so much individually that you can't put them together. Otherwise, you know, it's over, man.
Yeah,
you know, I love that. Yeah, but I mean, even though he atheist and now like just like yourself nowadays, more like agnostic. Like I don't know, maybe, but like I'm curious about it. I read about it, but like. I have no proof, so for me, nothing exists until there is there, but I'm open to the possibility. But I also, you know, because of, you know, anxiety and, you know, my head, philosophy really helped me. So I started, you know, teaching Stoicism and like those phrases, like this too shall pass, or that phrase I talked to you about, put your ass where the heart wants to be. Mm-hmm. It's like some commands that might help me get out of, you know, maybe a bad headspace or something like this. Do you have anything like this, or are you always mindful and able to control this kind of things in your head?
I usually go back to people. I go back to people who that have inspired me, like Henry Rollins. If I'm in like a bad headspace, watching like an hour of Henry Rollins be on stage and talk about his life and things that he's done will like inspire me and pick me back up.
So do you do that? Do you have anything like videos for him that you watch and maybe you could recommend for people to
he calls them talking shows. They're basically like stand up, but he doesn't tell any jokes. Sometimes they're funny. If you just put on Henry Rollins on YouTube, you'll find he's constantly doing shows all the time.
That's great.
And so you'll find like
and talking about it and so
live bootlegs of him or just shows from the 90s and 2000s where he's done it.
That's great. Yeah. And do you believe in anything maybe supernatural or weird like ghosts, aliens, cryptics, or a superstition or magic or anything like this? And if you do, how does that, you know, affect your life in any way?
The closest I ever got to that was when I was deep in the music, because for a while I thought that would, I was like, oh, maybe I can make a living playing and recording and selling music. The music industry crashed hard, and like that is like not really viable for somebody, especially somebody mm-hmm. like me who has like a day job and can't dedicate my life to touring and stuff like that. But when I was hardcore writing to try and get releases out, at least two releases a year, I really started to believe in like the idea of the collective unconscious, because when I would write lyrics, it oftentimes didn't feel like I was writing them. It would feel like I was a conduit for the words.
Like the dream you had out that you had idea for a game design.
Yeah.
Maybe. And, who sent you that? Right.
And I was pulling them through. I haven't really experienced that too much when I write. I don't know if anybody can hear that, but the fire whistle in my town just went off.
Wow. You can hear in the background, but you know, it's low. We can still talk. It's okay.
what was I saying? Oh, I haven't really experienced that collective unconscious channeling feeling when I do game design or even like world building stuff for games or writing stuff like that. It's all conscious effort, which is strange to me.
Those inspirations that sometimes come from nowhere, because a lot of, as I said, I like to read a lot of books about creativity and art and craft, and there's a lot of, you know, artists that talk about this conduit thing, like because sometimes the same idea will spawn with different people almost at the same time in different parts of the world. And as I said, I know I'm an atheist and agnostic, that I don't believe stuff, but I find it's kind of interesting to see how things kind of come up in the same way, and people have inspirations in different parts of the world. Seems very coincidental, and I don't know. It's weird. Like the things that we are tuned to more ideas, to pay more attention, and those things come to us more easily than when we are stressed or think about different things. So maybe, I don't want to believe it, but it kind of feels like, oh, we are tuned to this frequency, and if we're more fine-tuned to it, we can capture the signals better in a way, right?
Yeah, so, I used to talk to that with my wife, because she would co-write some of the songs, and for her, she described it like pulling teeth. She was like, I have to try so hard to get like 4 lines, and you will write 16 verses in the same amount of time. And she's like, I don't understand how you do that. And I'm like, I'm just open to the ideas, and I'm okay if some of these verses are bad. I only need 3 good ones. And just being open to the ideas.
Yeah. I mean, I read something today that's like creativity is like not being afraid of making mistakes, just putting it out up there. And art is actually subtracting all the mistake and just leaving the thing, the minimal viable thing, and it just works. And I don't know. Yeah.
But I will tell this story. My wife, her father was an alcoholic, and when he and it ultimately like ended his life. This was like a few weeks into us dating, so this was like 15 years ago, and she told me. This was several years later, because I think she didn't want to freak me out when we were first dating. But several years later, she told me this. She said a couple weeks before he died, her and her mother started seeing a shadow like looming above him.
Wow.
In certain like a dark specter would like loom above him or appear in the hallways of their house. My wife started seeing it first. And then it happened when it would be her and her dad would be there. And like her mom worked a different shift or something like that. So she wouldn't be there. And so she would be like, Mom, I saw the shadow again. And her mom would be like, you're just seeing things. What's wrong with you? This is not real. And then when one day it happened while her mom was there, and she was like, Mom, come look. And her mom like saw it. Her mom like freaked out and was like, do you see it? And she's like, yeah, I see it. This is real. And then after he passed away, that never happened again.
Wow.
And I don't have any explanation for that. I wasn't there, so I didn't experience it. But I have always been fascinated that happened to her.
Yeah. Do you mind asking, what did die for? You know, alcoholism. So maybe this shadow was this alcoholism that was like keeping him and like draining him, and like addiction is this thing that sticks to us and like prevent us from, you know,
maybe
being
that's hard to know. I think he had a lot of self-confidence issues and mental health problems that went really undiagnosed, because like, you know, as men, especially of older generations, are like not taught to talk about their emotions. They keep that all bottled up, and they'll, you know.
And we didn't know a lot of stuff back then too. Like, I mean,
also true.
My kid is autistic. I found out I am autistic because of, you know, seeing how similar we are. And I'm looking at my father and like, yeah, Mm-hmm. I see. But I mean, we never imagined it before. Like, this was never an issue. It was never discussed. And, you know, I don't know. Our parents, too, lived in a phase that was like, I think it was harder. Like, the focus was surviving, getting the job done, getting a house, and, you know, thinking about, I'm not feeling well. It was like this, the East Coast where they're at, because I just said, like, we don't care. You don't feel right. You have to do the job and get food and just...
Gotta keep everything running.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a shame, though. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a shame. I wish things could have turned out differently for that, but, you know. You do what you gotta
do. Yeah, we're doing our part, right? We're trying to be better to whatever comes after us, I guess. And they probably did better than their parents too, right? So
yeah,
is this something that I think about a lot? For. Yeah, yeah. And you know, Onslaught, we're getting into the final parts of the episode. But before I get to that, I want to maybe ask you a few. Want to talk more about the projects that are coming up for Onslaught 6. You know, seeing you in Space Cowboy, as you said, is going to be releasing a new book right now. Do you want to tell the wonderful weirdos out there where they can find your work, they can find see you in Space Cowboy and all their supplements?
Yeah, so when this comes out, everything should be at store.tidalwavegames.com is for all the physical stuff. You can find links to all the digital stuff on, we have an itch page, we have a drive-through link. All of that is on tidalwavegames.com. I write blogs at onslaught6.com, and that has links to all my personal socials. You don't want to follow any of those. They're all garbage.
And we have links to the stuff on the show notes too, so please check it out. It's a cool game. Awesome illustrations. If you like, you know, Cowboy Bebop, Scroungers in Space, sci-fi, cybernetics, and, you know, just having fun and being annoyed to trace your space routes and stuff like this, check it out. Space Cowboys. But it's like the good kind of annoyed, to be clear here. Now it's like the time for, you know, the fast Whimscope questions of like, if you could live in any fictional universe, any fictional world, be it from games, from movies, from comics, literature, any source, where would you lose to live? Where would you choose to live? And who would you be in that universe, in that world?
I would love to be in like the Star Trek The Next Generation era, because like it seems like they got everything figured out, right? Like they've solved the poverty problem. Everybody, it's basically a utopia on Earth and all of that. So yeah. just hook me up there. Just put me there, and I'm not going to be on the spaceship. Those guys can go out into the frontier. I'm going to stay home on Earth.
I'm just gonna
make my art and enjoy that.
Yeah, are you going to still make games there?
Yeah, I'll make games.
Awesome.
I'll figure out the rules for the 3D chess.
Yeah. And something else, like if you could have, you know, could make any of those things from this supernatural, fantastic, fictional worlds and universe and get one thing and make that thing real in our world, in our universe, what would you choose to make real and why? And that thing can be, you know, an object, a weapon, an entity, a power source, a location, a faction, anything like this.
I used to really think that like the 90s cyberpunk internet from like Johnny Mnemonic or even The Matrix, like the idea of like, oh, I just hook my brain directly into the computer and experience the internet that way. Mm-hmm. I used to think that was such a great idea, but the way I have seen the way the internet is now, I'm like, I don't think that's such a great idea anymore.
I don't want to put that in my head. No.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if I want to experience it like that anymore. So really, I think the other thing would be if we could have cybernetics that actually worked the way they do in like cyberpunk fiction and stuff like that, where like disabled people could have a fully functional arm or leg, or even like if we could use computers to like help people who are like missing part of their brains or something like that to like improve brain function, I think that would be great. I think that would be a great improvement to the world.
I hope they are getting better all the time
with that.
Yeah.
So I think one day we'll get there soon.
Yeah. And if you could choose any superpower to have, what superpower would you choose to have, and what would be the first thing you would do with that?
I would love weather control because I hate the winter. Like, the winter puts me into a real depressive state. Like, we are finally reaching spring over here in Pennsylvania, and I'm infinitely more productive than I have been all winter. Like, from early December all the way till April, I'm useless. I am like bare minimum viable product. Just get me in and get me out. Like, I will spend entire days just laying in bed doing nothing, because it's just like, it's so cold, I don't even want to get out from under this blanket. It's pointless.
Oh yeah. I mean,
so if I could control the weather, I would just make wherever I am 75 degrees all the time.
Yeah, that's a good temperature. Yeah. I remember, you know, reading this book, Silicon Artist, by Austin Kleon, that he really likes really either strong winters or strong summers, because you're forced to stay at home and you have no other option but work. But yeah, if you're, you know, forced to stay at home, you can get really depressed and not do the work. So I don't think that would work too. I mean, here we have really oppressive summers. So like, you're taking a cold shower and you're sweating, and I hate it. But I mean, I can still turn up the air conditioner and do the work, I guess. But I avoid going out. But I like going out. I think going out really inspires you. So your idea is very good. Like, keep everything 75 or 20 something, which is like for the rest of the world probably.
Oh right, Celsius. I forgot about that.
Yeah, and finally, I was wondering, like, the last question is, do you remember the last time you felt really, you know, really happy, you know, grateful for being here, being alive? And if you do, can you share with us when was that and what was that you were doing?
So when I moved into this house, I bought this house over the pandemic. My wife and I were trying to get out of the living situation that we were in. And in that, like, March, we were looking for houses, and we were trying to get like a traditional loan and everything. And the week that the pandemic first happened, everybody panicked, and all of the price, like the price of every house on the market, just immediately dropped by like 10 grand, which meant this house was worth $7,500. We had just gotten our tax return, and they had just given everybody in America like a $2,000 stimulus. So between us and my father, we had enough money to just buy the house outright, which means I got a pandemic house. And then a week later, everything shot back up because they were like, oh no, this is nothing. This isn't going to be a problem. And so we closed on the house. Sure. And when I picked this room out and I said, this is going to be my music studio. And I built the room like specifically to do music in, and then immediately lost all motivation to work on music and now do tabletop RPG stuff. Right. Mm-hmm. And so like, there's been like 4 years of like not working on music in here for whatever reason. Like I piddle around a little bit, but nothing is like really come from it.
It's
but,
kind of your hobby now, right?
It has definitely transitioned to a side hobby that I occasionally have fun doing. And I like doing it, don't get me wrong, but it's not on the front burner anymore in any capacity. Yeah. But earlier this year, I convinced my wife to come in and be like, let's just record a song. Let's cover a song. Let's play somebody else's song you already know how to do. Let's just have fun doing it. And not worry about if it's any good or not. And just like, we'll put demo vocals on it. We can re-record them later. If they're not good, it's okay. I'm not going to put it out. I'm not putting it on a schedule or anything. I'm not going to put any pressure on this. I just want us to have a good I just want us to come in and have a good experience in the studio making music together like we used to. And we did that, and we recorded a song, and it's one of the, it's a very important memory to me, and I feel very glad that we were able to do that and have that good experience.
Yeah, that sounds like an amazing experience, you know, creating something with the person, you know, that you love, even though it's a cover, but like doing that, it's great. Like, I love cooking with my wife. It's a way of connecting with them, and, you know, yeah, that sounds amazing. Also, do you have any last messages to maybe give it to the wonderful weirdos that are still listening to us?
Just to keep your head above water. It might seem like it's bad right now, but it can get better, especially if you work toward that. Think about what you're doing. Think about ways that you can make it better, and then do that. And take time for yourself. If you need to stop. Be your best friend. Be good to yourself.
Be your best friend.
If your friend was going through what you're going through right now, and you
what
told,
would you say,
you'd,
right?
You'd probably have some good advice for them. Listen to
yes.
that advice.
Yeah, yeah. Be gentle, like would be with a friend. Fantastic advice. Thank you. And Onslaught, can you take us out saying the catchphrase of the show? Keep it weird, everybody.
Keep it weird, everybody. Stay
Thank
gold.
You.
Thank you for listening to Weird Games and Weirder People. If you'd like to keep up with the show, please subscribe to be notified when we release new episodes. If you'd like to support us, please leave a review or head on to ko-fi.com/WGNWP. See you next time, and remember, weird is the new wonderful.